Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Morning Show. The Home Team. No, it's both. It's The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame.
Crossover, step back! That's
the buzzer! Right here on 960theref.com.
What's up, everybody? Sam Franco, Chris Brame. It is another edition of The Crossover Podcast right here on 960theref.com. This is episode number 52 of The Crossover, and
plenty to get to. Basically, I think with this edition, we'll slice it in half. We're going to talk SEC Media Days and some of the things that went down there. And we're also going to talk about Julio Jones and the Falcons telling him, we are not going to renegotiate at this time. So, Bray, man, it's been a pretty exciting July for a time of the year that you're not really supposed to have a whole lot to talk about.
Yeah, but the Falcons have spiced things up by drawing that line in the sand with Julio all of a sudden. And, I mean, you gotta expect now this is a holdout. I mean, training camp starts a week from today, and he didn't show up for OTAs. He didn't show up for minicamp. And I can't believe all of a sudden he's just going to be appeased by, okay, maybe you'll negotiate with me next year.
Well, he is currently at Matt Ryan's passing camp out in Los Angeles.
So at least
he showed up to that, but that was before, I guess, all this went down. So we'll see what happens. I would be surprised if Julio shows up to training camp for really any part of it. I don't think he's missing games. You know, I mean, he's going to come and play because he don't want to miss game checks. But, yeah, this might be a situation where he's like, oh, y'all aren't going to pay me? All right, well, I'm not going to come to training camp.
Well, it's like, what's going to happen? I mean, yeah, I mean, if he misses games, then he's not going to get paid. So if you've got a situation where a guy wants more money now than he is due, then you'd have to think, well, how long is he willing to go without actually getting paid this season? So do the Falcons play preseason games this year and realize, man, our offense really does need him, and they come to some agreement then? Or do they let it play out the first couple weeks of the season and see how things go? I mean, we know Atlanta's got a tough opener at Philadelphia, which is, let's be honest, that's a game, quite frankly. I mean, Atlanta could lose even with Julio Jones. And, you know, then they come home for those three straight home games. You got the Saints, the Panthers, and then the Bungles in there on the third leg of that. But, you know, I think if Atlanta came, if Julio somehow was still holding out through those first couple of weeks, and, you know, the Falcons then dropped one or two, both of those first two home games to New Orleans and Carolina, you know, then that's when all of a sudden the advantage swings his way when it comes to this. But hopefully it doesn't last that long. But, I mean, we know that he ain't showing up for training camp next Friday. There's no way at this point.
Who was the last end of the season holdout? Was that Cam Chancellor with the Seahawks? And then they didn't have him for the first four games, and they were horrible in the secondary, so he had all the leverage to come back, you know? And then,
yeah, I mean, it is like there's a couple examples where it works out for the players. I mean, honestly, in most of these cases with these holdouts, the players are the ones that do end up folding at some point, mm-hmm. and probably the owners know that, and that's why they're willing to to take the stands that they do. But yeah, I mean, Cam Chancellor is the recent example that, I mean, that might have even gone like 5 or 6 weeks.
I think it went pretty deep.
Yeah. And then back in the early 90s, you had the Cowboys and Emmitt Smith, and it was the Cowboys had just won the Super Bowl, so Emmitt wanted more money, and they went, we'll be all right without you. They started 0-2 and said, okay, what do
Here's
you need?
Here's your money.
Yeah. What do you need, Emmitt?
Yeah, those kind of things happen. And we were talking earlier on the morning show with Brent Rollins from Pro Football Focus, and he was telling us, I mean, all these ridiculous numbers in terms of it's not just about Julio's production in itself. It's more so about the distraction, you know, that he provides and the amount of attention that he draws from the defense, which gives guys like Devontae Freeman and Mohamed Sanu more room to operate.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where I think, you know, some Falcons fans now are making me laugh at this because It's, and I was talking about this yesterday, the greatest grift that NFL owners pull is obviously getting people to pay for their football stadiums. The second one is just convincing people that the players are overpaid and spoiled, and they signed the contract and they should honor the agreement because he just did. And too bad now if the market changed and you got all these receivers that are making more than Julio. But if Julio wasn't doing this right now, every Falcons fan would think he's the best receiver in the NFL. But now it's like, oh, he only caught 3 touchdown passes last year.
I hate hearing that.
And he
people
had that,
bring that up. That's
and he had that one stupid drop last year. But yeah, it ignores the fact that he creates so many opportunities for everyone else on that offense just by having him there.
Yeah, and I mean, look, he had one season where he scores 3 touchdowns. Not his best, and I'll certainly say that you want that number to be higher, but just because he only had 3 touchdowns last season and last season alone doesn't mean he's not one of the top 2 or 3 receivers in the league.
Who would you put ahead of him? Antonio Brown?
Antonio
maybe?
Brown's it. I mean, in terms, I mean, Odell Beckham Jr., people, I don't know why this guy is so hyped up. It's like, look, he's a head case off the field. He's showing up in bed with a lady with some white powder. And, you know, you've got all of these different things going on about him. He's got some off-the-field stuff. You know who you never hear off the field? Julio Jones.
Julio, until now, and I mean, this isn't like, this isn't
has
bad
to, do with
to me. Business. This is a guy who realized he's got his career's not very long. He's about to turn 30, and he wants to make as much money as he can while he can, and he's looking at, I mean, he did sign a contract 2 years ago, but all of a sudden now Brandon Cooks is paid more than he is. So, I know a lot of Georgia fans are also Falcons fans. We know this. And I just wonder, like, let's say at the end of last season, if Georgia had just said, Kirby's getting a raise. What are you getting a raise for?
Right.
You signed the contract, and, yeah, we expect you to do what you did. But no, what happened was Georgia almost won the national championship, and all of a sudden, like, well, we can't have all these other coaches getting paid more than Kirby. But some Falcons fans think, well, we think Julio's the best receiver in the NFL, but hey, too bad for him that there's like 8 guys that make more money than he does now.
No, and again, you know, people are like, well, he's just signed a contract or whatever and all this. It's like, look, giving him a little more money and when wiggling around the cap, I mean, teams restructure deals all the time.
Yeah, I mean, the contract he signed isn't guaranteed. I mean, a lot of that, the richest deal at the time for a wide receiver in the history of the NFL, I mean, just a hair over, what, $71 or $72 million.
Right.
I mean, a lot of that money is not even real. He won't see $70 million.
Yeah, and Brandon Cooks just signed a deal that pushed Julio down to, with his salary this year, he'd be the 9th highest paid receiver in the league.
Yeah, the average salary.
Which is ridiculous. Yeah. Like, I mean, yeah, that guy deserves to be paid more. And I'm not for – it's kind of one of these things where it's tough on – I can see both sides. But if I'm asking what I want the Falcons to do, yeah, I want them to take care of this guy.
Yeah.
Because he is going to go down as the best receiver in your franchise unless you tick him off and he goes somewhere else.
Well, yeah, I understand it's with the salary cap, it's not as easy as like, oh, well, yes, the Falcons should do something and pay him more. I get that it's more complicated than that, so I see that side of it too, but yeah, I mean, this is one of the great players now that the team has ever had, and you hate to see this, you know, the relationship suddenly turn rocky, but I mean, it's the timing of it, too, and this is a season we're all expecting. I mean, the Falcons have a shot to get back to the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
And can they get to the Super Bowl without Julio Jones?
Well, to reference the Pro Football Focus guy, Brent Rollins, we were talking about earlier, you know, he said Pro Football Focus did like a breakdown in terms of talent on NFL rosters, and the Falcons graded out as the second most talented team in the NFL.
Behind who?
I would assume the Patriots. We didn't ask. So he was dropping a bunch of Falcons numbers on us, which were making us very excited about this upcoming season.
Well, outside of like 4 guys that play for New England, Wynn, Michelle, Andrews, and Brady, like they don't have a great roster, do they?
Well, yeah, I guess not. But I mean, you look at the talent on the Falcons. I mean, just look at Vic Beasley, who was playing out of position last year, and the year before that, he led the NFL in sacks. Grady Jarrett is quickly becoming one of the best defensive tackles in the NFL. Deion Jones, quickly becoming one of the best middle linebackers in the NFL. Devondre Campbell's a good linebacker. You've also got in the defensive backfield, I mean, arguably, you have one of the best defensive backfields in the league with Keanu Neal, Ricardo Allen, Robert Alford, and one of the best cover corners in the league in Desmond Trufant. So I saw that in the articles or in the reports that we're talking about Julio Jones, the Falcons said that the higher priorities are getting deals done for Grady Jarrett Jake Matthews, and I agree on both of those. They are extremely important players, and you have to build from the trenches. But the third guy mentioned they want to take care of Ricardo Allen before Julio Jones, and I'm like, look, Ricardo Allen's a very good safety. He's not more important to this team than Julio Jones is.
No, and that's something where I you know, you talk about, boy, is Julio just going to accept that the Falcons' position here and now show up for, okay, sure, I'll be at training camp, and I'd have
it's
to
like, you think
like,
Ricardo Allen's more important than me?
Exactly. Like, you know, you're throwing that extra thing in there. Like, no, look, right now our higher priority is Ricardo Allen.
No, but wouldn't you agree, like Jake Matthews and Grady Jarrett, those are musts. You have to sign those guys long-term because of their importance. And because, look, like I said, Grady Jarrett is becoming one of the best defensive tackles in the league. And Jake Matthews is a guy that at left tackle, is he the best in the league? No, but you're shoring up that position.
No, yeah. No, I mean, Atlanta needs to take care of those guys. It's like Matthews, I guess, is coming out of that rookie deal. Mm-hmm. So they picked him in the first round, and they're, you know, the long-term thought with him is for him to be the anchor at left tackle for a while. And, you know, Jarrett's definitely turning into one of those steals of the draft that they found later on. But, you know, for this season here where, I mean, Atlanta's got a real shot to win the NFC and get back to the Super Bowl.
In their home building.
In their home stadium. And, I mean, you got to ask yourself, I mean, do you think they can win the Super Bowl without – or, I mean, just get to the Super Bowl without Julio? That's a guy, remember
– no.
Yeah, I mean, they basically forfeited the 2012 draft to move up to get him.
They did, and it's worked out well. You know, I mean, I mean, we talked about this before at the time. You know, I think you were one of the people that weren't in favor of doing all that they did to get him. And, I mean, they did give up a lot, but it's paid off because he's going to go down as the Falcons' best receiver ever. And, you know, he could potentially go down as one of the best receiver evers anyway, just depending on, yeah, on what he's done based on his statistics and his numbers.
And one of the top Falcons ever. Right now, Matt Ryan is the best Falcons player of all
time. I agree. Now. No, I agree with you. He won an MVP. Has any other Falcon won an MVP?
No.
Jamal Anderson got close, but he didn't win it.
Yeah, right. And, I mean, in Julio's, you know, somewhere in the vicinity of that.
Oh, absolutely. No, you're absolutely right. So he's a vital, vital cog in the Falcons' wheel, and I think ticking him off, you do so at your own risk.
Yeah. I'm going to get some scoop tomorrow, though, on it.
Uh-oh. Yeah. Are you going back to the barbershop?
Yeah, I'm going to hit my sources up.
Oh, yeah.
See what's going on.
Those of you who don't know, Chris Brame and Matt Ryan get their hair done at the same shop.
Matt Ryan's not there anymore.
Oh, he's not?
It's Thomas Dimitrov.
Oh, so TD's there. Okay.
Yeah.
So Brame will get the inside skinny for us.
That's my hot source.
We appreciate it.
Last time I was there, I found out he was not in good spirits. He was upset about a lot of things. I'm like, well, yeah, I can imagine why.
Uh-oh.
That Jimmy Sexton is getting on your nerves.
I can only, yeah. Jimmy Sexton, the Alabama power agent. There, because he's like the mostly does coaches, right? Like,
well, yeah, he's Kirby's agent. I feel like he's the agent for every coach in the SEC.
And he also has Julio Jones under his under his table there. So.
But he has a harder time negotiating against the NFL than he does with these college ADs.
Imagine that.
Yeah,
imagine.
He basically just tells those guys what he wants.
Yeah, so. You're gonna pay my guy this. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Sir, yes, sir.
Speaking of college football, SEC Media Days was this week. And certainly a lot of interesting things coming out of it. We'll get to Nick Saban talking about Jeremy Pruitt, and we'll get to Nick Saban saying the media is creating a controversy, even though he's the one that actually created it. But before we get to all that and before we get to the Georgia guys and all that stuff for Media Days, and I also want to get to ACC Media Days and talk about Larry Fedora and the things that he said. But first, Derek Dooley has become the offensive coordinator at Missouri, and according to Drew Locke, his quarterback, Derek Dooley is trying to teach I guess he's trying to teach Drew Locke the ways of the world and how to correctly do things. And one of those things is how you order a sandwich. According to Drew Locke, he said that Derek Dooley once yelled at him for changing how his sandwich was ordered. He says the reason they're putting it on the menu is because they've made it that way, and they think that's the exact way it should be eaten. I've actually started doing that, and he's right. That's what Drew Locke had to say. I don't know, man. It just kind of seems like Derek Dooley might be focused on the wrong thing if he's yelling at his quarterback for changing his menu item.
Well, I mean, I guess that's on Derek's greatest hits tape now, because that, you know, from the teaching Tennessee players, you know, proper hygiene when he was there as the head coach, and now trying to tell Drew Locke about, you know, hey, this is the this sandwich shop wanted to make you this sandwich. That's why they put it on there like that. So, like, it was, wasn't it Burger King that used to do it your way?
Yeah, do whatever you want.
But like all those, a lot of those other places, those things are already made. Now Chick-fil-A will,
they'll freshen it up for you, no question.
But, you know, and they'll write no pickle on there.
That's right. They even have the little like sticker that they stick on your sandwich.
Yeah, if you don't want a pickle on. So, but yeah, I mean, some I don't know what the sandwich shop was that he was at. Was it like a gourmet, like fancy place?
Yeah,
was
I have no idea.
You know, but sometimes these, you know, these chefs, I mean, they're artists, and they don't want you to, they want you to eat their food the way they're going to prepare it. They don't want you taking everything off of it.
So, you know, SEC Media Days always has some goofy stuff like that. But one of the things I found interesting was when Nick Saban was up on the podium, he was like blaming the media for creating a quarterback controversy, you know, and he's like, well, you guys create this controversy. And I'm like, hold on, time out. You're the one that created the controversy by putting Tua Tagovailoa in the second half of the national championship game and by not having named a starting quarterback. By definition, Nick Saban's the one that created the controversy.
Well, and also Jalen Hurts' dad, who said something to the effect of,
if I'm not starting, I'm transferring.
And if Hurts transferred, he'd be the hottest free agent in college football. And then Tua himself saying that I wasn't used to not being a starter. And
he said he was going to transfer.
I was going to transfer. So, yeah, both of his quarterbacks, or at least one of his quarterbacks and his quarterback's dad, also helped create the controversy. Certainly not just the media. But in the end, you know, Saban did say he appreciated them all for being there. So.
Yeah, well, that's great.
It was really sincere.
I just thought it was funny how he's he's out there saying that it's the media's fault or whatever for all
that stuff. Yeah, the media, they're responsible for everything.
And obviously with Georgia, the big story I think that came out ultimately, because when Georgia was actually up on the podium, their guys were very well-spoken. I thought Terry Godwin, J.R. Reed, and Jonathan Ledbetter represented the university as well as any players could. It was very nice to see that, and Kirby obviously carries himself very well. But the main thing that's come out from Georgia's perspective doesn't really have anything to do with this team. It has to do with Coach Pruitt at Tennessee. You know, you had Aaron Murray kind of saying, questioning the leadership ability of Jeremy Pruitt, and then David Pollack was asked about it, and he also brought up not specifically, but some of the things that we've all heard that Jeremy Pruitt may have done around here, whether it's maybe mixing it up with Brian McClendon, or maybe showing up at Coach Rick's house when he shouldn't have, some other things like that. And look, obviously, there's rumors all the way around with stuff like that. But a lot of the stuff, you know, Pollack said that a lot of the stuff was true, and a lot of people verify that those kind of things are true without going into too much detail. But Pruitt kind of clapped back at Murray and said, you know, you don't go from what, being like a kindergarten teacher to the head coach at Tennessee without treating people the right way or something. And also Nick Saban backed Pruitt up in the sense that he said, those things didn't happen when he was with me. I can't say they didn't happen, but they didn't happen when he was with me.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, you know, Pruitt ain't going – Saban's definitely the one in charge at Alabama. Pruitt's going to be on the up and up there.
Well, yeah, I think that's the point in all of this, though, is that Coach Richt – Pruitt felt that he could walk all over him. And then he gets to Alabama as sort of a second chance for Pruitt there, and it's like, you ain't walking over Nick Saban, man.
Well, yeah, I mean, we all I guess it was the week after that that horrible loss to Florida, the Fatone Bauta game, that, you know, there were those rumors that actually Pruitt was being fired. Remember Richt actually leading up to the Kentucky game? I mean, Richt eventually had to come out and make some sort of a statement that, no, I mean, Jeremy's in his office working and we're preparing to play Kentucky this week. But, I mean, even Tracy Rocker afterward, I mean, basically made it sound like, I mean, Pruitt had tried to stage a coup and overthrow Richt. But he had those comments after that Bauta game because the defense actually played pretty well in that game. But in the end, I mean, when your offense just can't do anything.
Well, they were trying to fit a round peg into a square
hole. Yeah, it snowballs. And what did, I mean, he made some comment about, well, you know, I guess we should have only given up 3 points or something like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was shot at Brian Schottenheimer, so.
Well, a lot of people were taking those.
Yeah.
Low-hanging,
I mean, not just Jeremy Pruitt, but, you know, and also, I mean, I guess Hudson Mason, too, who's actually, between Murray, Pollack, and Mason, is the one guy who actually played for Georgia when Pruitt was here.
I know, right?
I mean, he kind of confirmed a few things about Pruitt being rough around the edges, but also said, like, I still think the guy's a good coach.
Well, I think he said some of those things were needed. Like, Georgia had fallen into I'm not going to say mediocrity, but Georgia had become comfortable, become complacent in the Richt era, and I think Jeremy Pruitt came in and snapped some things into shape.
Listen, I mean,
certainly think he helped in that.
I'm skeptical that he's going to be a solid head coach at Tennessee. I mean, and let's go back to the other issue too. It's not like that was Tennessee. Like, this is the guy we want,
right?
I mean, that was a mess of a search that had Dave Doran and Mike Leach, and then they had originally, I guess, they had had the, you know, some sort of an agreement with Greg Schiano, and then eventually it just comes to, all right, well, you know what? I guess we'll just take another Nick Saban assistant because it's working out for Georgia right now. But look, the guys that Georgia just sent to the NFL on defense, I mean, Pruitt got those guys here.
He did.
I mean, we appreciate him for that. He was much, much better than Todd Grantham. So I liked him when he was here. And I mean, part of me wanted Kirby, if there was a way for him to keep him as the defensive coordinator, I'd have been for that.
Yeah, but, you know, I think things are okay in Athens, Georgia nowadays. So certainly looking forward to seeing what happens with Georgia and what happens in the SEC this year, because there's certainly some interesting storylines with the new coaches and things like that. I made a joke on Twitter when I found out some of the stuff, switching to ACC media days now, after finding out some of the stuff that Larry Fedora said, I was like, man, I went to the wrong media days.
And you can't joke on Twitter because half the people don't know if you're joking.
That's
or not.
True. That's a good point. But I was like, man, I should have gone to ACC. I went to the wrong media days because Larry Fedora's out here saying a lot of interesting stuff, basically saying that, you know, there's no proven link between CTE and football. He also said that if football goes down, that America will go down too. And
that's a hot take.
Yeah, and I think didn't he say something like he talked to a general one time and he was like, why does America have the best military in the world? And the general was like, because America's the only football-playing nation in the world.
Yes. Here's the thing about I thought about Larry Fedora and
Coach Hat.
Well, we're in a it's like we live in this post-factual world now where everyone just believes what they want to believe.
Absolutely. No, that's the thing. You believe whatever like TV tells you and you're like, "Okay, I'm going to believe this. I don't care if it's wrong."
All and any evidence to the contrary. And so here's a
global warming doesn't exist.
Right. Well, so here's a guy who, as we all remember, once coming out of a timeout called a screen pass from his own end zone.
And caused a safety.
That Georgia got 2 points because of. And now he's up there.
He had a big penalty at the end of the game, like getting in the ref's face that cost him 15 yards.
I think that led to that play, yeah.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah. He got a 15-yard unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. They backed up, and then they, you know, they're in their own end zone, and they decide, like, hey, you know what a good play would be? Let's throw a screen pass in the end zone. Now this guy, a couple years later, is like, I don't believe scientists.
Yeah. He's like,
and doctors.
Well, but then, like, he came back out and, like, kind of doubled down on the after he like went away, and then they sent him back out. I'm like, hey, you got to clean some of this up.
Well, yeah.
And then he basically went on to say, like, talking about kickoffs, he was like, well, you know, we're changing the rules and trying to get up, but we're probably going to have to eliminate them if the things don't change. So then he goes from one extreme to the other, like talking about eliminating kickoffs, and it's like, what is this guy doing?
Well, like the real issue, and I know, I mean, I think someone at North Carolina, I guess their AD had to like,
he came out and he was like, I'm kind of surprised he said that.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, kind of the issue is when I played, football was a head game, you know, and it's like
rammed your head into the wall.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of showing right now with the nonsense you're rattling off at ACC Media Days. But, you know, so then you're like, well, so does this guy not care then about the safety of his players? Because, you know, if a guy's like, boy, were you out cold? All right, well, splash a little water on your face, slap, wake up, get back in the game, here's some smelling salts. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, North Carolina to come out and say, no, he does care about his player safety.
Well, and I have a friend who covers North Carolina football, and I texted him. I was like, dude, what is up with your boy, Larry Fedora? And the response I got was, it just makes us easier to fire him after a 6-win season. I think North Carolina fans are probably about ready to move on.
Oh, yeah, they were the worst team in the ACC last year, which, I mean, about a month ago is – like, who was bad in the eight? Jeff and I were talking about something, and we were like, all right, let's do an example. Like, who was, say, the worst team in the ACC last year? And I was like, who was the worst team in the ACC last year?
Well, Syracuse beat Clemson, but then they lost 5 in a row at the end of the season.
Well, I mean, it was North Carolina. They went 0-8.
Mm-hmm.
So, I was like, oh, wow, North Carolina was the worst team in the – yeah.
Going over in the conference.
And I don't know that their prospects seem that much better this year.
But I think Larry Fedora just becomes the latest in a pretty long line of college, or not just college, but a long line of football coaches and football people that have come out and said, there's no link between CTE and concussions. And it's like the person that says guns don't kill people, bullets do. It's like football doesn't kill people. Repeated blows to the head do. Oh, well, what happens in football? Repeated blows to the head.
Even the NFL now is finally acknowledging that, right. Oh, yeah, there's a link. There's a link between our sport and that. But the guy that once called for a screen pass in his own end zone, I don't care what those scientists are telling me.
Yeah,
well, you
wrong.
Know, there's studies, right? Yeah, I don't believe them, though.
Yeah, studies.
Well, that's fine.
Pshaw!
It's like
studies.
Costanza. It's not a lie. If you believe it. Everyone just believes what they want to believe now.
That's right. So we'll see what happens with Coach Fedora. Certainly going to be an interesting season for him at North Carolina.
Well, that'll wrap things up on this edition of The Crossover, episode 52. He's Chris Brame. I'm Sam Franco. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes. Leave us a 5-star rating and review. We would greatly appreciate it. That helps us shoot on up the podcast chart. So anything y'all can do is greatly appreciated on our end. But again, Chris Brame, Sam Franco, thank you so much for listening. Back next week with another edition of the Crossover Podcast right here on 960theref.com.
You've been listening to the Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame on 960theref.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.